This is Out of School, a podcast at the intersection of technology and education. My name is Fraser Spears, and I'm joined as always by Bradley Chambers.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's all right. How are you?
Well, big day. I got my AirPods order in, and I will have them by Christmas. So I'm very, very excited. I, about 9 o'clock this morning, saw a tweet from underscore David Smith that they were available, and I jumped on it, and mine will be here on the 21st. So the exciting thing about that is the West Coast people finally got screwed by an Apple release date, because they usually – so obviously like it's not iPhone pre-ordering season, but if you remember that, they usually go on sale at midnight Pacific. So I think, Fraser, that is like 8 a.m. for you.
Yeah, it's actually not too bad for the UK.
Yeah, it's not – you know, so everybody like it's really fun. So if you think about like, you know, if it's 12 a.m. Pacific, so like even in Australia, that's like 12 p.m., so it's lunchtime. But what you have to remember is for Eastern, it's 3 a.m. So it is like the absolute worst time to like get up, because if it was like at 1 a.m., you could just order it and go back to bed. But yeah, for me, like 3 a.m. is way too close to when I get up, about 5:30. So I end up just staying up. So yeah, by the time the West Coast people were up, they were like after Christmas. So that was my anniversary present for my wife back in October. So I jumped on that.
Nice. I was able to do the same thing. I got lucky. It was the news came at a kind of weird time. I think it was, lunchtime or something here, maybe something like that. But I was able to jump on as well and get an order. And mine should be arriving on the 21st of December. So in the UK, I checked just before we came on the show, they're still showing availability before Christmas in the UK. But I know the US got wiped out pretty quickly with that.
Well, and they do. I have read like the retail stores should have stock, so it's a good reason to check out the Apple retail stores. I'm really excited about it. I mean, the reviews I've heard. I mean, the one that kind of summed it up for me was when John Gruber, daringfireball.net, and the talk show said it's his favorite Apple, like one of his favorite Apple new Apple products in years. I mean, there's been a number of new ones over the past few years, and I could see it really something that like I carry around in my pocket, like a stick of gum or a pack of gum.
Yeah, I'll mention a product later on. This show is, of course, the Holiday Gift Guide show that has enabled me to kind of lose one item from my pocket. And I think the Apple earbuds are going to just slip right in there. And I think they're going to become like the second thing that you won't leave the house without, along with your phone. I really think they're going to become very important as a part. And I don't know if you've noticed this, Bradley. Maybe your kids are younger in school, but I've noticed that like teenagers now in school, like, They do not go anywhere without headphones at all. I mean, it's hardly a new phenomenon. It's been happening since the days of Walkman, but I kind of feel like it's gone up a notch. And I think it's not just because like everybody just wants to watch Netflix all the time, but a lot of the interactions you have with like not just content but learning on the computer involve audio and video now as well. And just like nobody wants to not have access to that as well. I mean, this partly for entertainment as well, for sure, but it's kind of becoming important in the classroom as well.
Well, and you can see like where students say had them and they're paired to their iPhones, thanks to like the W1 technology with iCloud syncing, they could easily just move that to their school owned iPads.
Yeah, if they're using the same Apple ID in both places, yeah. And that's an interesting. I wonder if you know. Are you able to use a managed Apple ID to
good question
to sync your AirPods? I don't know. It's all very personalized, isn't it? You know.
Well, I think it's a reason for you to bomb and expense it through the school.
No, that's a plan. There you go.
So yeah,
I think this we've started recommending already, haven't we?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah. So this is our annual gift show. We've like just things that we think are neat and will be good gifts for people, the tech people in your life, and a really fun way for us just to. These are neat things we found over the year that we like, and so I'll get started like in explaining one of these. Mine is the Tile Bluetooth keychains. They call it the Tile Mate. And they have another one called the Tile Slim that is kind of a credit card size. And what you do with this, like the I'm always losing my keys in my wallet. I don't know why. And so you can stick this thing on your keys. It's like a keychain. And then it pairs with your phone via Bluetooth. And you can make your phone ding by pressing the keychain. Or you can obviously make your keys ding by pressing the button. And as long as it's within Bluetooth range, it'll do it. And if it's not within Bluetooth range, it'll at least show you the location that it last had it, like on a map. So you'd know, like, okay, my keys are at home somewhere. Like, they're here or they're at work somewhere still. And so the Tile Mate is $25 on Amazon. So it's actually what we're getting my father-in-law for Christmas, on, among a few other things. He doesn't listen to the show, so it's, I don't think. So it doesn't spoil him. But it's a, kind of a, just an easy gift for someone that is forgetful in your life.
Yeah, those are starting to get quite mature now. I remember one of our teachers had a, he bought the one of the very first Kickstarter products. I think it was called Chipolo or something. And it was kind of occasionally a bit temperamental, and it would start going off for no reason and things like that. But yeah, they're pretty cool. My first one is kind of a pedestrian one, but this is something I actually have, and it has really changed, not changed my life, that's putting it too strongly, but has changed the way I kind of work with my iPad Pro. And this is the Apple USB-C charger and the USB-C to Lightning cable. Now, this is kind of the gift for the Series 12.9-inch iPad Pro user in your life, because what it does is it enables much faster charging to the point where you can charge your iPad up to 100% and use it at the same time. Now, Apple gives a pretty wimpy charger when you buy the 12.9 iPad Pro. It's the usual either 10 or 12-watt charger, the little chunky one that goes in the wall. But this charger is the same one that comes with the MacBook, but you obviously need a USB-C to Lightning cable rather than a USB-C cable at both ends to charge the iPad. Now, it's only the 12.9-inch iPad Pro. It's not the 9.7. The 9.7 will just charge it at its normal speed with this, but the 12.9 can take advantage of a different power delivery spec or something to charge up a lot faster. And for me, it's really made a difference, because I carry that with me as well when I travel, and now I don't really concern myself too much with keeping a battery pack around for charging my iPad with, because I mean, my iPad's got a huge battery, and it's never been that easy to even keep it alive with a battery pack. But with this wall charger, you can plug it in, sit it for 20, 25 minutes, and put, you know, a good 20 to 30% on your battery at that point, which is really cool. So I've noticed also, Bradley, that Apple's pricing is very helpful these days, because it's the exact same price in pounds and dollars, thanks to Brexit and Trump and everybody. So it's $49 or £49 for the charger block. And then the cable is, at the moment, because Apple is doing that kind of post-MacBook Pro price cut on the cables and dongles and stuff, £19 or dollars for the 1 meter cable and $29 for the 2 meter cable. Now, £29 for a cable is pretty eye-watering, but I recommend getting the 2 meter, because if you're in a situation where the plugs are down at floor level or they're further away in a hotel room or something, having that extra meter is really going to help. So I really, really enjoy having that, even though I kind of think it probably should have come in the box and I sort of resent how much it cost. I'm quite glad to have it now that I've forgotten the pain of paying that amount of money.
I just remember back my first, I bought my first PowerBook, and it came mm-hmm. with the VGA and DVI to mini DVI, because like that's yep. what was on the computer. It was mini DVI, and it came with both adapters like in the box. Mm-hmm. And you know, that would be nice if they would not be so stingy with those accessories in the box, but they do sell them and they do make money, so capitalism for you.
That's it. If we didn't buy them, they wouldn't sell them.
True.
But then they make the machines that make us have to buy them, so whatever.
My next item is something I picked up recently. It is the Google Wi-Fi system. Okay. So like at my house previously, I had two 11AC Apple AirPort Extremes. And if you believe the news, that Apple is getting out of the router business per se. And while those access points were still incredibly fast and they're really, really good, I had no reason to replace them. I like to tinker. And so I picked up the 3-pack for $299, which is a pretty good deal. And it's cheaper than Eero, which is another popular type of these systems. Their 3-pack is $500. And so what Google Wi-Fi is it's like whole house Wi-Fi. So you plug in one into your cable modem or to your router or to your, you know, not your router, but like your ONT or your modem, just any kind of modem you have. And then even if you don't have wired Ethernet throughout the house, you plug in the other ones like, you know, around your house, you kind of spread them out. And it uses mesh networking to broadcast a fast signal around your entire house. Well, I have Cat 6 everywhere, so I actually have all of mine hardwired in. It's still doing the kind of the same technology. It makes a massive network. It's really, really nice. It works well. I got it up and running in about 25 minutes, and they have a really nice app. You can see how much data each device has used over like the past hour, the past day, the past 7 days, the past month. You can pause certain devices. You can give certain devices higher priority. Like if you wanted to give your, you know, Apple TV higher priority for a couple hours while you're watching a movie, you can pause devices. Just really, really good stuff. I'm a big fan so far. Great price, $300. It's, I mean, it's like one of those, if you're looking at buying even like a Asus Nighthawk or one of those routers that costs like, you know, $180. I mean, for $300, you can get a three pack, and they're really, really good. Has 11 AC Wave 2 technology. Even though you probably don't have any Wave 2 devices, it's still there for when it comes. I'm big fan so far. Even if you don't have, you know, wiring throughout your house, it is definitely a great option, even for mesh networking, where it kind of creates a whole house system without the wiring.
And the performance of the mesh networking is better than it was in the past, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the technology has matured a lot. And so there's a difference between like mesh and a repeater, where a repeater just is like relaying the signal. So it really wasn't that, you know, it's a different technology. And works well. I mean, obviously, ideally, you would have all these hardwired, but most people don't have that option. Yeah. Works well. Again, if you have wiring, it's ideal to use it, but it really works well. I mean, all these things, all these systems perform about the same. I mean, obviously, one has to be technically faster, but with a lot of this stuff, you couldn't tell a difference. I mean, I can't tell a difference between the Google system and the Apple system, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty neat system, and obviously, you can keep expanding too. So you can start with one, then you can add another, you can have three, add four, depending on the size of your house. And big fan so far.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely in the market for something at home because I'm still using not even the current generation, but the previous generation AirPort Extreme, which is doesn't have AC on it. And now that I have a number of devices in the house that do support that standard, I think it's time to maybe think about moving up, because I know that my Wi-Fi performance is nothing like as fast as my internet connection, but I've never bothered about it before because I didn't have any devices that could go faster, but now I do, so it's definitely worth looking into. Cool. My next one is Apple Watch straps, which I absolutely love. When the Apple Watch first came out, I was kind of like, well, who could be the kind of person who would bother to change their Apple Watch strap to match their mood or whatever? And I was really pretty snotty about it, and I regret that now because I have become such a person. I think one of the things, like, I just love changing the band on the Apple Watch. Just, I so appreciate the design of how easy it is to just press that button and slide the strap out and slide a new one in. And it feels great just to use a mechanism that is so beautifully designed that it's kind of fun to swap your Apple Watch band. Never mind the fashion part of it, which is not my particular expertise. But the other thing that I absolutely love is the Apple Sport Band. And some people don't get along with that Sport Band, but I absolutely love it because the way that the sort of loose end of the band tucks inside rather than hangs outside and never catches on anything is just phenomenal. And that's always been really important to me. So I actually already have three sport bands. I've got orange and mint and also black, which is the one that came with the watch, because I've got the original space black Apple Watch aluminium. I've also tried some knockoff ones from Amazon. I've got a knockoff Milanese Loop in black, which was fine until some of the black started wearing off it a little bit. But I've also got a knockoff leather loop from Amazon, and both of those are about £20. So there's a lot of really low cost non-Apple watch bands on Amazon in many different colors. I've seen some kids at school have got Apple Watch with things like, you know, Union Jack flag printed on the band and things that Apple would never do, you know. But you can get them out there as well. So I haven't really liked, I did buy, before Apple brought out their own yellow one, I wanted a yellow sport band, and I bought one from Amazon for about £12 or something, and it was horrible. Now, everybody feels differently about materials, but I found those cheap sport bands to be kind of greasy rubber, almost. You know, they gathered a lot of dust on them, which the Apple bands never do. So I'm a bit of a snob about only wearing the Apple Sport Band because I hate the feeling of the other ones against my skin. But the other knockoff bands, the Milanese Loop one and the Leather Loop, they were fine and quite enjoy wearing those even still. So Sport Band, £49 or dollars at the Apple Store. Now with an excruciatingly large range of colours, which will take you hours to evaluate them all. But I kind of have my eye on the the actual official apple yellow one, which is sort of not quite a banana yellow, but a sort of mustardy yellow, which I think yellow and black will look pretty cool together. And also the woven nylon bands, which I've seen quite a few people getting into and wearing. There's quite a nice range of colours in that as well. And of course, Apple will now sell you, you know, a watch band at almost any price, because you can buy those, you know, those Hermes ones, the leather ones that are like £300 and £400. You can buy them separately from the Hermes watch, which is a special edition watch that you can get as well. So you can sort of fake it till you make it as well with that.
Yeah, it's a big market. I mean, it's nice. The nice thing about, you know, like with phones and iPads, you can't, you don't really generally have more than one case. But yeah, with watches, you could easily like pick up someone a cheap, you know, band for a stocking stuffer kind of thing.
Yep. And it's interesting to think about it from Apple's point of view as well. Like, I've got three Apple Watch straps, so I've spent an additional like one third of the cost of the watch on additional bands from Apple, you know. So they must be making good coin off of that product.
Yeah, that's true. That's absolutely true. Okay, so my next one is really kind of two things in one. It is the iHome Smart Plug or the iDevices Plug, and I'll link to both of them in the show notes. And what these are like those, basically those things you plug into your outlet to make your outlets like smart, where you can control them via phones. But what I like about these two is they're HomeKit compatible. And so let's talk about what HomeKit is. You know, you probably heard about that in the like Apple keynotes. You've seen the app on your iOS device running iOS 10. And what HomeKit is a way to funnel like all of your HomeKit compatible devices into one single app. So let's say you have, like in my house, I have one plug from iHome, then I have three from iDevices. I got a Black Friday deal to get three more. Well, they're all in one single app inside of HomeKit. I don't even have to use the manufacturer's app to control them. I don't even have those apps on my phone. I'll probably download them at some point to like upgrade firmware and stuff. But it kind of funnels everything into one app, and you create scenes where, like, okay, it, you know, when I press the daytime scene, turn these things on, and you know, lots of options. There are lots of options for automation with your GPS. The cool thing is, HomeKit compatible devices, they kind of get outside of your network through your Apple TV. So like, I can control these things like from work, without having to like open ports on my, you know, router and things like that, and create security issues. It literally, the Apple TV is the bridge to the outside world through my iCloud account. So it works extremely well. You can even share that with another person's iCloud account. So I've shared our home with my wife, and she can control us from her phone as well. They work really, really well. I've not had a single instance where like they just didn't work. Big fans so far. So, really, I'll be looking for HomeKit compatible devices, you know, going forward, because it kind of alleviates my big fear with a lot of these devices that the apps are terrible, they're never updated, they're insecure, and things that are HomeKit, there's a little bit better security in there. And you know, I remember reading an article earlier in the year that's like Apple's security requirements are holding HomeKit back, and on the flip side, now we're realizing that may be a good thing.
Yeah, thanks for doing that, Apple. Yeah, let me tell you about the app for my £25,000 electric car, which doesn't even support the iPhone 6 yet. So you're absolutely right. Apps for these things are usually terrible, and best avoided as much as possible. So that's quite interesting that you can. And of course, there's also integration with like Control Center on the phone as well. So you get another panel in there, don't you?
Yep, and you can either have it where it shows like your favorite accessories or your favorite scenes, and you can change back and forth rather easily. So like I have the lamp in our breakfast nook, our lights in our mantle with our Christmas stuff, and then our two Christmas trees are both on there, and I can hit either one of those on and off at will, or if I hit a scene to say do bedtime, they all go off. Okay. So yeah, pretty cool stuff.
Interesting. So my next one, this is one that I pretty much recommend this every year, so I'm kind of cheating a little bit, but it's a battery pack. And of course, battery and power have been in the news a lot recently because of what unfortunately happened to the Galaxy Note 7, i.e. going on fire and burning people's cars out and things like that. I've really changed my thinking about battery packs. In previous years, when we've talked about, you know, get a battery pack for your friends and family, we've kind of focused on which companies make the biggest pack for the least amount of money. And you're now able to buy like really big battery packs, you know, with USB charging and so on. And I've sort of changed the way I think about that quite a lot, because I mean, I'm not Bear Grylls, right? I'm not going out to the wilderness and not coming back for months on end. Really and truly, between, you know, the iPad Pro and the iPad Pro 29-watt charger, which is great to have with you because you can get a quick charge anywhere, And of course, the iPhone Plus sizes as well, which have got bigger batteries. Really, it's just about keeping the phone alive for a little bit until I get back to wherever it is I'm going. So it's really just an emergency, you know, 1 to 1.5 times recharging on the phone. It's not keeping the thing going 6, 7, 8, 9 recharges. Except I'm almost never away from mains power that long. You know, on a flight or whatever, even on a flight, a lot of planes nowadays have got a USB socket in the back where you can charge the whole way across your flight, whatever. So, I think what I don't recommend is buying battery cases that fit the form factor of your phone, because A, that really only charges your phone. B, they're generally quite hard or annoying to use. And C, whenever you change your phone, you've got to change a relatively expensive battery pack as well. So I much prefer packs with USB sockets in them. And we do have one or two big ones that we use when we go camping, where we charge, you know, two phones, a couple of Apple Watches and things like that. And we can just share that around, Kindles, different stuff as well. So packs with USB sockets are great. What I've become more keen on recently is, you know, have you seen these sort of slim battery packs you get that have got an integrated lightning cord? Those are really cool. A lot of teachers in school have got one of them, particularly teachers who've kind of got an older phone where the battery is failing a little bit and they need a charge. They're carrying that about in a purse or a pocket quite a lot. So they're really handy just for sort of keeping your phone going, and very light and thin to carry about as well. And there's many different models you can get. So the only thing I would recommend, though, Bradley, is that people look for the Made for iPhone certification and maybe spend that wee bit more just to make sure you get one that you know is going to be safe. Because we would certainly hate to see your house burn down based on one of our recommendations.
Yeah, you can't ever go wrong with extra power. I mean, it's always nice to have, like, the old, what's the old show, Home Improvement with Tim Allen? You know, mm-hmm. more power.
More power, yep. Just worth mentioning, though, just for people who are not familiar with how to buy a battery pack or how to size the right one, basically every battery in your device has got a certain capacity, which is measured in milliamp hours. And every year I kind of give an update on what the current numbers are for current Apple products. So I've pulled together the list for this year. And you'll see battery packs rated in terms of 1,500 milliamp hours or you know, up to multiple tens of thousands. I've seen 20, 25, even 30,000 milliamp hours in some packs now. But just to give you, to sort of calibrate your understanding, an iPhone 7 is 1,960 milliamp hours in its battery, and an iPhone 7 Plus is 2,900. So there's a huge step between the normal size and the Plus. And the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus are similar at 1,715 and 2,750. So the 7s have got a wee bit more. Now, of course, that doesn't mean that because the Plus size models have got 50% more battery, they get 50% more battery life. Those bigger screens are power hungry, so the bigger device does use more power in its operation as well, but you do get a little bit more battery life for those. The little iPhone SE, 1,624 milliamp hours. iPad Mini, the iPads are huge. The Mini is 5,000, over 5,000 milliamp hours. The 9.7 Pro is 7,300 milliamp hours. And the 12.9-inch iPad Pro is 10,307 milliamp hours, which is not the biggest ever iPad battery. That honor goes to the iPad that we had last generation at school, which is the fourth generation iPad, which is 11,560 milliamp hours. I think that's pretty much the biggest battery that any iOS device has ever had. And in fact, the newer models even have less than that. And just for fun, Bradley, I stuck in here the Apple Watch battery sizes as well. So any battery pack you get, if you can plug in the Apple Watch charger, the 38mm original model is 205 milliamp hours by comparison. So you get a feeling for the Apple Watch battery issues. And the 42mm is 250 milliamp hours. So it's a tiny fraction. It's less than a tenth of what an iPhone 7 has got. And the Series 2 watches are all a little bit bigger. 273 for the 38mm and 334 milliamp hours for the 42. Bearing in mind those S2 models have got GPS, so they're going to be more power hungry as well. But there's just some numbers. You're talking about sort of 2,000 to 3,000 milliamp hours for a phone, 5,000 to 10,000 milliamp hours for an iPad, and then, you know, divide this capacity of your battery pack by the capacity of the device you're trying to charge, figure out how many charges you're going to get out of the pack you're looking for.
Yeah, I'll list these that list in the show notes as well, so yeah, people can have that have it in there. Yeah, it's always good to have, because you don't always need the biggest, but you want to get enough, like, you know, depending on how often you think you'll be away from power as well. So
yeah, you want to make sure you get at least 1x charge, you know, because there are some really tiny, tiny little packs where you'll get less than a full charge as well. And that might be fine for your use case, but just be aware that you're not going to get a full second 100% on the display when you use it.
Okay, so my next one is a luggage company. It's the carry-on from the Away Luggage Company. So I don't know if they've been sponsoring some podcasts recently, and this is something I definitely want to buy next year for any travel I do. This is a company started by ex Warby Parker people. So like they make the eyeglasses. You can buy and they'll send them to you, and you can send them back and keep the ones you want. And so what's cool about it, it's really, really high quality luggage, and then it's got a built-in USB charger as well. So, like, you know, the idea is you're sitting at the airport, you don't have to be looking for like a wall plug, you can just charge your device right in there. Really, really high quality stuff. I think the carry-on starts at $250, so it's not necessarily like the cheapest in the world, but it is really, really high quality. So definitely recommend you check out that. It's the Away Luggage, the carry-on pack.
Does it just have like a little USB socket in the outside of the case? Is that how it works?
Yeah, on the top of it, and then because it's removable on the inside, depending, like, because some airports won't allow that, but it is like kind of built in. But yeah, it's a little USB thing on the top of it.
USB sockets everywhere. Yeah.
Yep.
I suppose it's just worth mentioning, just in passing, with travel and USB, is have you seen these things that you get? They're like a data isolator for USB sockets. And what it does is if you plug this, it's like an A plug on one side and an A socket on the other side. And what it is it only allows the power to pass through and not any data signals, which is a really useful thing to carry with you if you're traveling and trying to charge your phone from unknown, untrusted data ports, which might try and, you know, pair to your device or download some data or something like that. You can get them on Amazon for a few pounds, and they're quite a handy thing to have in these troubled information security times.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's something I stress about often now. All right, so you're up. Your next one.
Okay, so this is the thing that I mentioned that has enabled me to stop taking my wallet anywhere, which is a company called Spigen, who I recommend this stuff from before, and I'll mention their Apple Watch stand as well. I got their case for my new iPhone 7 Plus. It's called the Slim Armor CS. And what it is it's an iPhone case, just a pretty standard, you know, push-fit iPhone case. But it has on the back a sliding door. And inside that sliding door, you can keep two credit cards. So I've put in there my normal bank card and my driving license, and took the plunge to just kind of leave my wallet at home. And since I did that, I thought, you know, this is never going to last because I always get this card or that card or whatever. I have not carried my wallet for a single day since. And part of the reason why this is actually working really well is because around about where I live, Apple Pay is now so well supported that even with, you know, the case and the card case and everything, I rarely ever pay that way. I'm almost always paying with Apple Pay now, which is really cool. So it works at the supermarket, it works on vending machines here, it works at, you know, many restaurants, all that kind of stuff. Even if, because we had the chip and PIN really well deployed before Apple Pay came out, and then contactless had actually been here for quite a long time as well, that was a real boost to the adoption of Apple Pay, because it was working in shops before people even knew what Apple Pay was. And now I can tell you that Apple Pay stickers are everywhere in the UK. All the big supermarkets are taking it now. So it's been really interesting to see that roll out.
Yeah, it's really started to, where I shop at, it's kind of coming along. And actually, my credit card got hacked recently. Like, even when the chip and PIN ones, obviously they detected it, and my credit card company kind of handled it, and they sent me a new card. But the kicker was, like, I went to use Apple Pay and realized that was the only card I had in Apple Pay, so it didn't work. And then the worst part about all that is having to update everything that is auto-paying to that credit card. Okay. That was a pain. But yeah, got my new card in and got it back on Apple Pay. But Apple Pay has been something that I think, like, it's just really, really nice when it works, because especially, again, knowing my credit card was stolen, number was stolen, like, the more places I have Apple Pay, the more places that can't happen.
Yeah. Yep. You're not sharing that token information with anybody. But it's interesting. I noticed I was out shopping just the other day at the supermarket, and I used my watch to pay, and the cashier said, "That's the first thing I've ever seen anybody do that." And I'm like, "What? How long has it been?" And, you know, this is a supermarket where thousands of people come through every day. And I'm literally the first person you've seen using Apple Pay. I mean, she didn't appear to be new to the job, which might be the explanation for that. But I said, you know, do you normally see people paying with their phone instead? And she's like, no, never. I never see anybody using that. They use a contactless card, but not any of that stuff. I was surprised at that. I thought it would be more common.
Well, my wife doesn't use Apple Pay. I mean, I've tried to set it up for her. She just doesn't care. I mean, I think when it's like 100% everywhere, then I think you'll see.
Yeah.
It's like it's still something you got to think about. Where everywhere takes the chip and either swipe or insert the card. Not everywhere takes Apple Pay. So you have to like kind of think about it. Okay. My next one is something I cannot buy or even receive, unfortunately, is the Apple Music gift card for the whole year. It's $99. And the reason I can't buy it is because I have a family plan. So it doesn't work if you have a family plan or a student account. But you can redeem it for $99 of iTunes credit, which then can pay for your Apple Music subscription. So basically, if you have like someone, if you want to like subscribe to Apple Music, or you have someone that you know likes it, you can give them this card. It'll prepay for the entire year of Apple Music, and a really, really easy gift. I love it because it isn't just generic iTunes credit that then like is eaten up every month. It actually prepays for Apple Music, and if you've never even used the free trial, you'll get 15 months because you'll get like the 3 month free trial, and then it'll use your credit. I wish you could prepay for the family plan. I would just pay $15 a month times 12 and be done with it. I like paying for things yearly because it makes me really rethink the next year how much I use that, because it's so easy to keep paying like $15 a month for something, but if you're having to pay a few hundred dollars for something once a year, it really makes you take stock of if you like it or not, like, or how often you use it.
It's really interesting. I didn't realize you were going to pull this one out, Bradley, because I literally just bought this gift card the other day. Somebody gave me a gift of £100 exactly, and of course, a pound being a dollar nowadays, it's £99 in the UK. But a couple of things. I was a little bit confused, so I had to. I asked the person at the Apple Store the question that you've just answered, which is, this isn't just $100 of credit that you're supposed to drain off and keep there, but it actually will activate one full year of service on Apple Music without any interference with your iTunes balance either way, which is really cool. But it's a separate card. This is the thing that you need to understand. It's not the same thing as an iTunes card. It's specifically an Apple Music card. And that's important. You've got to get the right card in order to make sure that you get the credit that you're looking for on that. But yeah, one of the things I never wanted to, I didn't want to pay like £10 a month for Apple Music, but using gifted money once a year is fine. And, I think what that will let me do is not have to worry every month, like, oh, should I be canceling Apple Music this month or whatever. It'll run for a year, and then we'll see how much I used it, and maybe that'll stay.
And you do, like, if someone gave you this gift, like if someone sent this to me, and I have the family plan, you can, like, when you redeem it, you have the option to redeem it as regular iTunes credit. So, like, it's not like it wouldn't be usable. But again, I wish Apple would offer this in more ways, but what I've heard, this is not necessarily the reason Apple doesn't do it, but the reason some companies don't do annual plans on things, because it's hard to measure attrition when you don't like from month to month know like if people will cancel. So like, let's say my big frustration is like with Google Drive space, like they charge you $2 a month. It's like, let me just pay $24 a year for the 100 gigs. Yeah. But if they don't know, like, then who isn't, like, after 6 months is not using it anymore and planning on not renewing? Where if you have to renew every month, the attrition is easier to measure.
And they can also track it closer to changes they made, right?
Right.
Did iOS 10 cause people to cancel Apple Music or whatever? Not that I think it would, but just as an example.
Right. So, but if you do get it, you can redeem it for iTunes credit, so you could use it towards credit on the family plan, but it would just be a dollar for dollar. The thing I recommend there, if people want to pay for the family plan, is you can watch these deals on eBay from like PayPal. They'll sell you a $100 iTunes gift card for $80 or $85. And so it's like getting a month for free. And so I'll do that with like iTunes cards. And then that's one of my next gifts. I'll actually just segue into that. Because I was going to mention it, like I'll do the same thing with Netflix and Hulu gift cards, which I think are great gifts for people, because it's like, if they're already a subscriber, it's just basically kind of prepaying that for them. But if you pay for it personally, like if you'll set eBay alerts for a Netflix gift card, iTunes gift card, and Hulu gift card, you can often find them like where someone's selling a $50 Netflix gift card for $35. And so you're like saving money there. But those are, again, those are great gifts for people because we love those services and we're going to pay for them. And you're basically just helping them prepay them.
Yep. Cool. This is another one that I picked up when I was waiting in the Apple store for my wife's phone to get fixed and swapped. They're selling an interesting range of drones there now. And most of them are from this company Parrot. Parrot and DJI are the two companies that Apple stock in the Apple store. But DJI are obviously a very prominent drone company and Parrot are a second to that. Different kinds of things. The DJI Phantom is a very kind of professional drone. I flew one when I came to visit you, Bradley. You remember we went to Daniel Milbank's school and we flew his DJI drone. And they've gotten even more sophisticated since then. And that was so much good fun. I've really wanted one ever since, but never quite been able to justify the money. But the company Parrot are doing more interesting but cheaper drones. You know, the DJI drones are, you know, multiple hundreds of pounds, up to thousands of pounds. Whereas one that they had in the store that was really cool was called the Parrot Swing, which is, it's a kind of, if you imagine like a Foam X, where the propellers are on the ends of the arms of the X, and you stand it up like this, and then it will take off vertically, but once it's taken off, it can kind of rotate itself, and the X, it becomes like an X-wing, and it flies into the wind with the leading edge of the X. It's really cool fun. It looks great. It comes with a controller and stuff, and it's about £120. You know, it's not multiple hundreds of pounds to get one of those things. That was quite good fun. And they have this other one called the Disco FPV, which is really interesting because, as you know, most drones are like quadcopter style. They've got four rotors and they fly and balance themselves. The Disco is sort of halfway to a military drone because it's a fixed wing aircraft and you can fly it like that. And you basically throw it overhead to launch it, and then it will basically fly under its own control for a little bit until you're ready to take control of it. But it will fly for a long, more than a mile away. It will fly for 45 minutes at a time, and it's got a high-def camera right in the nose cone. But the coolest thing about it, Bradley, is that you can pair it to your phone and then slip your phone into a VR-style headset, and you can see the sort of bird's-eye view that your drone can see as you fly it, which is that's the coolest thing. Now, that one is quite expensive. It's currently £900 on the Parrot website, but it looks like unbelievably good fun. And I was like, for the first time, I was like, yeah, where can I get £900 for that? Because that looks like a great gift or a great thing to have.
I was going to say, I can actually give you a reason on why a lot of schools should own a drone. It is very helpful, like if you have a large building, for like after storms, assessing roof damage.
Interesting, yeah. Hadn't thought of that.
Yeah, we are. The church has one. They had picked up for something else, and then like we didn't. They were going to sell it because they didn't need it anymore. Just kind of bought it to use once and resell. And then like they've actually been using it, like allowing going and helping other churches locally. Like you know, look at the roofs after bad weather, and then we've used it here. Like when we just got a new roof, and they were checking on it, making sure it looked good, and they were able to do that using the drone. And it's actually pretty cool and very useful.
Yeah, that sounds like good fun. Yeah. I was going to say one other thing. It's worth just, particularly in the UK where the laws are pretty tight on this, checking your local laws about flying an unmanned aerial vehicle, because we had a look at that in the school just in case anybody wanted to fly a drone, and we found that there was actually nowhere within the school grounds that we could legally fly a drone because you're supposed to be, I think it's 50 metres from any building that you don't own or control, and our school is kind of surrounded by other buildings like that, none of which are more than 50 meters away, so we can't fly a drone there without permission, which we could get if we needed to, I suppose, but laws are different everywhere on this right now because it's such a new thing.
All right, so my last one is, and I'll link to it, it is a very, very inexpensive TomTom GPS watch. So running is a big hobby of mine, but I've gotten to where, like, I love Runkeeper, but I don't often necessarily want to like I actually have to use the app, like if I don't want to run with my phone. And this is like a thing, it's been on sale for as low as $70. Normally retails for about $90, but it's a really, really extremely durable GPS watch that syncs with Runkeeper. So you can sync it with like the TomTom app, and then the TomTom app will push it over to Runkeeper for you. And Runkeeper is the running app I've used for the past like 6 or 7 years. It's actually, it's funny because it's the the oldest app I have on my iPhone. So, you know, if you go to the App Store, you go to the Purchase tab, like, you can scroll back, like, a long way. Like, you can see the very, very first app installed. Yeah. And Runkeeper is, like, the oldest one that I still use regularly. Like, this, the oldest one still on my phone. And it's, they've been around since, like, the early days of the App Store, early days of GPS, and really, really, really big fans of it. So I'll link to that. So if you're wanting, like, if you have a, someone that's into running that you want to get a GPS watch for, it's less than $100, and it works very, very well.
Yeah, it's a good chunk less than the Apple Watch, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Cool. Well, my last one, Bradley, just very briefly, because everybody knows it, is the Apple Pencil. And I'm absolutely certain that a number of people at school are getting this for Christmas, because I keep taking tech support calls about it from parents. I'm not naming any names, because I know some kids listen to the show, but some of you might get something thin and white in your stocking this Christmas. And, you know, obviously you want to check that the person you're buying it for has got an iPad Pro, but if they do, they're going to be good to go with that. So, yeah, really, a really great gift, and opens up so many possibilities, including even just for kids, like colouring in and things like that, and drawing is pleasurable with the Apple Pencil.
Yeah, and they're easy to find this year. Last year, they were a little bit harder to find this time of year.
Yeah, I think the AirPods are going to be the big can't get it for Christmas present this year, but almost everything else Apple's got right now is pretty easy to get your hands on, I think, at this time of year.
Except the jet black iPhone 7 Plus.
Is that still tough to get?
Yeah, I think it's like still booked out to the new year. It's
Oh, man.
You know, have you seen the rumors about like the red iPhone? Like I would normally love that. But see, what I want is a like red or blue back with a black front.
Yeah, they keep putting white on those colored ones, don't they?
Yeah, I don't like what I've had like a white iPod, but I've never owned anything but a black iPhone.
I've been white since the iPhone 4S now. Apart from the iPhone 5, which I got the black one, and I kind of fell out with black there because the finish was so terrible in that. But I've been white ever since that.
So, so that's our gift guide for the year.
Cool.
We'll be off till the new year. And I hope every one of our listeners has a very Merry Christmas. I hope you enjoy the time. I'm sure most of our listeners are going to be off for a few weeks, because that's the benefit of school life. And you get a couple week break. And I've got report cards to look forward to on coming back. And those are always fun to come right back to. We don't send our second semester and second quarter report cards home until after the new year. It's kind of a way to keep kids out of trouble over the break and they had a bad. But I'm not kidding. I mean, parents can see the grades. No. I mean, that's the beauty of technology. Parents can. I mean, report cards are kind of pointless because parents could average them out themselves with a calculator if they wanted to.
Yeah.
And so, but yeah, have it from Fraser and I, from my family to yours. I hope everybody has a very safe and very Merry Christmas.
Absolutely. We will see you all in the new year.